This is the San Francisco Experience with your host, Jim Herlihy. Independent news commentary with a California perspective. Season 7, Episode 4. Working from home. You knew it was too good to last. When the COVID lockdowns began in March 2020, corporate America was faced with a dilemma. The highly contagious virus required social distancing, mask wearing, and avoidance of crowded spaces to lessen transmission. New York City in particular seemed to be ground zero for the explosive spread of the virus, and draconian isolation measures were taken to protect workers and the population at large. New York, of course, is the most densely populated workplace environment in America. Offices, factories, stores, and schools were closed. The stock market, in the face of such massive and unprecedented disruption, sank by hundreds of points every day, with no end in sight. Disaster planning to work off-site had been developed by employers in the wake of the 9/11 terrorist attacks, also in New York City, and those contingency plans were activated in the face of COVID-19. Of course, with the advent of the internet, Zoom calls and meetings, as well as digital technology, the concept of the virtual office had already been developed, but not universally adopted nor implemented. That all changed in March of 2020. Corporate America and government robustly implemented working from home contingency plans with HR protocols and operational practices quickly put into place. By June of 2020, less than 3 months after the lockdowns went into place, the office had gone virtual. Outposts of the Fortune 500 corporate giants were to be found in almost every family room, den, living room, bedroom, and basement of suburban America. The stock market rallied, taking note of the fact that workers had swiftly adapted to the virtual office environment of working from home. Further, the angst of worrying about kids out of school with no daycare or babysitters was assuaged by mom and dad being at home to look after them while juggling conference calls, Zoom meetings, management reports, and all the activities and practices of day-to-day office culture. The working from home culture seemed to be developing quite smoothly. Silicon Valley innovators took note, and by the summer, when no vaccines or an end to the pandemic was even in sight, giants like Google, Salesforce, Twitter, and Facebook announced that work from home policies would last through at least 2021 and possibly into 2022. In fact, some of these innovators said that the practice would become permanent at the choice of the workers. In densely populated urban environments like New York and San Francisco, younger corporate types who were paying exorbitant rents of $3,000 to $4,000 per month for a one-bedroom apartment realized they could relocate virtually anywhere and be connected to the office, keeping their handsome urban salaries and benefit packages. Mom and Dad's basement in the far-flung suburbs got another look. Young families crippled with high-cost childcare in big urban centers realized that their extended families in small towns across America could help with the kids, and by getting out of the big cities away from COVID infection, their families would be safer also. So leases were broken, condos and co-ops were sold. The U-Haul truck was loaded up, and young executive families beat a hasty retreat to the more affordable and safer communities far from the big city. But they, of course, were not commutable. And since you were working from home, virtually connected virtually to the office, you wouldn't skip a beat. Also, rents and the cost of housing out in the distant suburbs was much lower. So a New York or San Francisco salary out in the hinterland meant that you could live like a king. All was well. COVID-19 had some very attractive silver linings for the corporate world and corporate workers. And there was much heady talk about a new work model which would do away with long commutes, expensive childcare, and long distances from family. Facebook was one of the first corporate giants, however, to rain on this idyllic parade. If you chose to relocate out of the high-cost San Francisco Bay Area, for instance, to lower-cost Sacramento, Central California Valley, or Nevada, you'd have a salary reduction. But a 5 or even 10% pay cut would be manageable given the lower cost of housing and the cost of living in those newly attractive destinations that until recently were regarded as the boondocks by corporate hipsters. But this brave new world of working from home for the rest of your corporate career started to show serious cracks this past week. And the likelihood of permanent working from home practices is even less likely now. None other than Goldman Sachs' CEO David Solomon rejected remote working as a new normal. In fact, he described it as an aberration. Goldman Sachs, of course, is the premier American and global investment bank, headquartered in New York City. New York City, of course, is the financial services capital of the corporate world, so his opinions carry great weight in U.S. boardrooms and throughout the world. In fact, he was probably the first, but most likely not the last, American CEO to warn that workers have to be back in the office and not in the family room of their homes to rebuild corporate discipline and focus. Mr. Solomon said that during 2020, less than 10% of Goldman Sachs' employees had been working in the office. Further, he noted that working from home does not suit the work culture at Goldman Sachs. And the Goldman Sachs culture is held up as the gold standard throughout the financial services industry. So cities and workplaces like New York, San Francisco, and London, which have a very high concentration of banking and financial jobs, are likely to follow suit and listen closely to what Mr. Solomon had to say. He continued, quote, "I do think for a business like ours, which is an innovative, collaborative apprenticeship culture, this is not ideal for us, and it is not a new normal. It's an aberration that we're going to correct as soon as possible," Mr. Solomon said. In particular, Solomon is concerned about the incoming class of about 3,000 new recruits for 2021. Eager young graduates, the top of their class from the best universities in the United States and globally, just won't get the direct mentorship that they need. And sitting in front of a laptop computer watching endless Zoom meetings is no substitute for the real-life experience working in Goldman Sachs's trading room, for instance, or on Wall Street. Quote, I'm very focused on the fact that I don't want another class of young people arriving at Goldman Sachs in the summer remotely, Solomon stated. And he's right. Part of the great success of Goldman Sachs and other leading financial institutions is the unique corporate culture that is created in the boiler room type experience of working alongside seasoned financial engineers for a junior trainee. While COVID-19 has accelerated the adoption of digital technologies and made all companies more efficient, Solomon doesn't think it will lead to huge changes in the long term. I don't think, as we get out of the pandemic, that the overall mode of the way of a business like ours and how it operates will be vastly different, Solomon said. Other banking giants are voicing the same reservation as David Solomon. Last September, J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon said that working from home has had a negative effect on productivity. Barclays head Jess Staley recently said he hopes that the COVID vaccine would allow employees to return to the office. However, Lloyds Bank and HSBC have both announced plans to cut their office space footprint by 20% and 40% respectively. But not all the corporate giants are marching in lockstep with the banking industry. Facebook, Fujitsu, Nationwide, Otis, Siemens, and Twitter have announced that large portions of their workforces may or must work remotely. Not only is it cheaper, it may increase productivity for those companies, according to some of their managers. And employees, of course, prefer working from home. A recent Korn Ferry survey found that 64% of workers feel that they are more productive at home, and that is contrary to the skeptical, wizened managers' suspicions that there's a lot of slacking off and home chores that are done while employees work at home. But some of the most successful Wall Street stocks like Apple, Amazon, Google, and Goldman are not offering indefinite work-from-home options. They want employees back in the office, and much evidence supports their position. Permanent work-from-home policies were a bridge too far for many companies. And if your stock price is riding high, the market figures that you're doing a lot of the right things. Mr. Solomon himself has opted to work at the office for the past year, and he does not work from home. I dare say that given the politics of advancement up the corporate ladder in any major company, physical proximity to the boss is crucial. It always has been, and it will always continue to be. An ambitious young man or woman on a corporate fast track wants, needs, and is given a high degree of visibility and exposure to senior management to strut their stuff, as it were. The old corporate adage, which is also a warning of out of sight, out of mind, could not be more true in the brave new world of working from home. Doubtless, there will be some roles in the financial service industry, for instance, that lend themselves to remote work, but they're likely to be lower-level, non-managerial jobs. And given the convergence of digital technology and artificial intelligence, the long-term viability of such jobs is bleak in any case. Over time, work from home will be seen as the soft option for the employee who who is not on a management track and whose job is threatened by technology, to say nothing of being ambitious. And as a result, more employees will drift back to the office once vaccinated and reassured that their workspace is socially distanced and safe. HR policies will gradually formalize the work-from-home phenomenon, lowering salaries by 10 to 20%, cutting hours from perhaps 40 to 20 hours, and insisting on tighter data security infrastructure and requiring at least one day a week in the office. My personal prediction is that by early 2022, a full 80% of employees in corporate America will be back in the office, albeit subject to new hygiene practices. Political pressure to return to normal in the corporate world will also be intense. America's vast transit infrastructure, for instance, that carries millions of commuters from suburbs to urban corporate workplaces, is running multi-billion dollar deficits, threatening their ongoing viability. Here in San Francisco, for instance, the regional train system, which is called BART, has racked up a $1 billion deficit so far, and that deficit continues to grow and likely will grow as work-from-home policies remain in place. BART, on a normal workaday day, brings 400,000 workers into downtown San Francisco. But during the pandemic, less than 10% of that amount have been using BART to commute into San Francisco because most of the offices are closed anyway. Newly appointed Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg has made shoring up transit system finances his highest priority. And it's not just urban commuter transit that it's suffering an existential threat. The corporate real estate industry, for instance, and the small business ecosystems that supply a host of services and products to large urban employers, as well as other critical support infrastructure, is vitally dependent on a return of employees to the office. Like the swallows return to Capistrano, they are eagerly awaited. My sources for today's podcast include the BBC, Fortune Magazine, and CNBC. And listeners, please take a moment to visit our website at www.thesanfranciscoexperiencepodcast.com and subscribe. It's free to do so, and by doing so, you ensure that all new episodes of the San Francisco Experience will come directly to your inbox. This has been the San Francisco Experience and your host, Jim Herlihy, reporting to you from America's favorite city, San Francisco.